Hello, everyone, and welcome to Unyielded, Thriving No Matter What. I'm your host, Bobby Kaler, and I'm so happy that you've joined us. Part of what drives my coaching career, and by extension this podcast, is to provide hope, knowledge, and assurance that we can all be more fulfilled and successful if we choose. I believe that there is tremendous power in choice. We are confronted with choices from the time we wake up in the morning until the time our heads hit the pillow at the end of the day. Will I choose to believe in possibilities for myself? Or will I choose to believe in my limitations? Will I choose courage? Or will I choose fear? Will I choose to listen to those who believe in me? Or will I choose to listen to those who doubt me and tell me that I'm not good enough? Will I choose to do the work that I know that I need to do in order to move towards my desired future? And will I choose that consistently, every day, not just once or not just for a couple of weeks, but every day for the long haul? I spent about 10 years of my life recovering from an illness that one doctor said I only had a 3% chance of recovering. And here's what I learned. I had to choose possibilities. Even when I wasn't even fully sure of what those could be, I had to choose courage. I had to choose to listen to those who believed that I would recover. And I had to do the tedious, grinding work that, at the beginning, seemed so bleak and so far away from any sort of desirable future. But I knew one truth. If I did nothing, nothing would change. And at least I was going to give myself a chance at a desirable future. This podcast was created to help you make the choices that will propel you towards your desired future. So what are we waiting for? Let's get to this week's episode. My guest today is a Florida girl with a love for travel and business. In 2016, after a decade-long career in public health and leaving an abusive relationship, she set out on an adventure, a four-month solo backpacking trip around the world. That trip helped her to discover herself and a whole new passion, bringing exotic and luxurious goods to those looking for something as outside the box as she is. Her name is Ashley Dozier, and I cannot wait for you to meet her. Ashley, thank you so much for joining me.
Hi there. It's great to be here.
Awesome. So why don't we just dive in? Do you want to just introduce yourself to the listeners?
Yeah, absolutely. My name is Ashley Dozier, and I am now an entrepreneur, owner of a fragrance company called Anniket Luxury Apothecary. But I, in a past life, worked in public health and have a story to share with you about how the heck you go from public health to traveling around the world and then owning a business and just some big life changes.
And I'm curious too, before we get to your story, what'd you do in public health?
I taught at a university. I taught a health course at a university. And then I ran the health education department at another university. So in the student healthcare center. And then lastly, I worked at the CDC in chronic health. So helping to eliminate chronic conditions around related to obesity and tobacco.
Wow. That's impressive. And there's a lot there.
A lot. I had a very robust career in public health prior to what I do now. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, you alluded to it. You have an interesting story there. Do you want to share with us a little bit?
Yeah. So I actually moved to Atlanta to pursue my career at the CDC. I was working in public health and really loved what I was doing. So don't get me wrong, I love the field. While I was in the process of moving to Atlanta, I met somebody and we began dating. And pretty much the entire time I lived in Atlanta, we were together. So that was a total of 6 years that I was in a relationship and figured out during that relationship that it wasn't what it was supposed to be. Learned what emotional abuse is, verbal abuse, mental abuse, and learned a lot about gaslighting and narcissism. And at the near the end of that relationship, when I was finally able, we agreed that being together was no longer in either of our best interests. You know, we clearly were not healthy for each other and we split up. I actually put everything I owned in storage whenever I gave him the house and moved out of our home. I packed up a backpack and I went and traveled the world by myself for about 4 months. I did a solo backpacking trip around the world. I did a full world tour and visited 12 different countries during that time and happened to find a product that I fell in love with personally while I was on that trip and ended up, when I got back to the States, being able to create a new business out of it. And so that's what I do now. I'm an entrepreneur with my own company, but I like to see that, you know, although it was a very rough time in my life, of course, it has completely changed the trajectory and thankfully brought me something that I'm very passionate about.
Yeah. What I love about that is the going through a hard time. Don't love that part of it,
no.
But that there's something at the end of it, right? There's that chance for a new beginning.
Absolutely.
So there's a lot to unpack in what you just said. Obviously, I think there's a misperception about what like emotional or verbal abuse might be. Can you shed some light on that or give us some examples?
Yeah, absolutely. Because I probably didn't even recognize it while I was in it either. You know, it takes a while to really realize what exactly that is. And once you start to see the manipulation and the gaslighting, like I mentioned, once you start to see what those things are or be introduced to that idea, you can start to pinpoint it and start to really kind of, you know, keep track either in your mind or journal or whatever to be able to then be able, you know, say, okay, this is a pattern in something that does really fit kind of that mold of, you know, verbal abuse or emotional abuse. I think that most of the time we think of domestic abuse as physical abuse. And in my case, there was no physical abuse. It was threatened. And that's when I finally, we were kind of at the end. And, you know, that was one of my cues to leave. But sometimes it's a lot harder when there's not physical abuse to recognize the abuse that's there and to say, okay, I need to leave, because it kind of keeps happening and it happens slowly. And you don't always realize what's happening to you. So some examples are things that little controlling comments, they can be as or sound as benign as, you know, if we're out to eat and the waitress comes by and asks if you want dessert and your partner asks, do you really need that? Do you think you need that? And kind of gets in your head a little bit of just to create that little bit of self-consciousness and, you know, not being able to rely on your own intuition and your own feelings. Then it turned into a little bit more persistent things where if we were, you know, with a group of people and I said something that he was not fond of in some way, it would be, he would kind of reach over and squeeze my leg as a way of telling me to be quiet or to kind of, it was a control tactic, you know, to try and say, settle down. You know, I don't agree with you and you need to not be talking about this topic. That one was pretty common. And again, something that was subtle. And then it really started to turn a little bit more obvious with comments such as, none of our friends really, you know, you kind of turn a lot of our friends off. You kind of push a lot of our friends away because of you're too opinionated or you're too big of a personality or things like that. You know, there starts to become some of those things. I finally was flat out told at one point that our friends hang around with us to be around him and just kind of put up with me being there. That's when it gets more obvious, obviously, you know, you start to go, okay, wait a second. Like, that's not what you would say to somebody that you actually love.
That's right.
You support somebody that you love. And then it would turn into, you know, true verbal abuse. That I would say is more along the emotional abuse line where they're just kind of slowly feeding you those things. Some of that can be, you know, a form of gaslighting where they're constantly telling you these little things to make you believe it to the point where you start to wonder yourself if it's true. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, saying that our friends don't actually love, you know, being around you, or so-and-so was saying, you know, how frustrating they are every time with you hang out, you guys hang out together now and whatever. And, you know, come to find out after the relationship, I was courageous enough to ask some of these people if it was true. And most of them were like, I never said that. That was very misconstrued. You know, he definitely turned that and used that against you. So it's those kind of things where they're telling you lies or they're stretching things to try and get you to believe something that benefits them. And then it can turn into straight, you know, verbal abuse where the name calling starts telling you that you're nobody likes you or you're worthless and really, you know, yelling at you. A lot of ours had to do with drinking. You know, there would be times where alcohol was involved and it would turn and just, you know, some scary moments of yelling and things as simple as asking him to put his seatbelt on in the car and an outburst of, why are you trying to control me? You always do this. I mean, it's the kind of thing that you look back now and you're like, really? Like, because, you know, I'm driving and I want you safe in my car because I personally have been in a horrific accident where a car flipped over my car. And so I'm a seatbelt believer.
And it's the law.
And it's the law and it's safe. And, you know, I mean, not a big deal. Like, I tell anybody that gets in my car to put on their seatbelt. But when that kind of stuff turns into, you know, this, you're trying to control me, don't tell me what to do kind of moments, you know, somebody that you love would recognize that you're saying those things out of love, that you are saying, put on your seatbelt because I don't want anything to happen to you, not because I'm trying to control you. So you really have to pay attention to the smaller clues that happen first, because it tends to continue to grow and develop into different things. From, you know, that smaller bit of like manipulation can grow into stronger gaslighting, into, you know, full verbal abuse. And it's hard to recognize, but that's why I tell people, you know, try to pay attention to the little clues and ask friends around you if they're comfortable with what they saw. Because if they ever do it in front of somebody else, you know, that's definitely something that, you know, happened only a few times in our relationship. And they friends were kind of like, yeah, no, that wasn't right.
Yeah.
You know,
I think too, what you're describing here, and this is, I don't know if everyone's seen the movie Gaslight, what was it, in the 1920s, amazing film, but that's where that term comes from. And it's actually, when you watch the movie, it's like, this is so evil.
Yep.
It's just evil. And the power of it is that it starts at such a small, small level, you know, and you don't notice it. You don't notice it at first.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's the thing is that, you know, somebody can say something to you. People say it all the time, say things that they think is true, or they exaggerate things or whatever. And they may not trying to be manipulative necessarily, or they're not gaslighters just because they do that. You know, gaslighting is something that, you know, people need to take seriously whenever it becomes a pattern of they're continuing to do this and continuing to tell you the same things over and over that really make you start to question your own reality.
That's
and
right.
I think that's the biggest thing that people need to understand, because I think some people will use that term a little too lightly and say, don't try and gaslight me, you know, and because they're having one argument that they say, you know, they don't agree with your version of what happened. But gaslighting really can be much, much more detrimental to the long-term psyche of somebody, because you're really making them question. And this is when I got out of my relationship, one of the biggest reasons I went to travel by myself and without an itinerary was because I had lost the ability to trust my own intuition. I did not trust myself anymore. I didn't trust my gut. I had always been very, very intuitive before that relationship and really able to pinpoint things. And I think I noticed some of that stuff early on, you know, but then throughout the relationship, that was one of the biggest things that he called into question, was if I was truly right about all these things that I felt in my gut and that I thought and that I, you know, believed based on intuition and just kind of a gut feeling. So when I got out of the relationship and I said, you know what, that's one of the hardest things for me now is just to trust myself. I just didn't trust myself. And I said, I need to, you know, on this trip that I'm taking, to trust that I can get myself through this. I don't need to plan everything ahead of time. You know, I can go with the flow. I can meet new people. I can, you know, visit new places and really just learn to trust my gut again and understand that I am one whole person on my own and I can make decisions, you know, without being told whether I was right or wrong and, you know, gain that confidence to do that again.
Yeah. I think that traveling gives you a terrific opportunity to tap back into that. And you said you were just backpacking, right? So, I mean, you just had like few possessions with you.
I had one big, heavy backpack because I fit as much in there as I possibly could.
I love that. So it was a 4-month trip. What were some of the most important things you discovered about yourself on that trip?
I remember, because I decided for most of the nights that I was traveling to stay in hostels. I had never done that before. I was in my early 30s. I won't admit that much and don't do the math, but most people in hostels were 10 years my junior. And so, I really had to go in and think, okay, like I've been told for the past 6 years that people don't like me, that I'm too much for people and all these things. And so I went in thinking, okay, I'm sharing a room with strangers, in some of these places, we're going to see how this goes. And I will tell you, I made some really cool friends, like people that I still keep in touch with to this day. I think that was one of the biggest discoveries, was just that, gosh darn it, people like me. Like it was, just, I was able to make friends wherever I went and, to make real connections with people that I still talk to, like I said. And that makes a difference whenever you're being told that people around you just aren't a fan of being around you. I didn't tell many people my story while I was traveling. So it really made it fun because I got to be myself. I got to be fully me. It didn't matter. Nobody knew mm-hmm. me. So I could totally just be anybody I wanted to be, which I just wanted to be me. And that was huge to be able mm-hmm. to be accepted in all these different places with all these different people, just for who I was.
It is a powerful thing. It reminds me, I was in an unhealthy relationship and I would say I didn't recognize it at the time, but I actually had a therapist because at one point I'm like, I'm having so much trouble dealing with this person. And so, over time, what I started to see is he was very controlling, and it was that constant, it's like the drip of water, the yes. comments where you doubt yourself and it's like, well, I didn't mean it that way. And you're always walking on eggshells. And when yes. we broke up, it was only a 2 week trip, but I took a 2 week trip to Cabo and I got up every morning early, because that's just when I wake up. And I'm one of those annoying people who, when I wake up, it's like a light switch,
Oh, gosh, and that was something like my fiance.
Yeah. I know people hate us, but that was something I was always criticized for. And I thought, I'm going to get up whenever I wake up and I'm going to go down to the water by the ocean. And there's this lovely little spot to get coffee and croissants. And it was so peaceful and calm. And I'd have my coffee and croissant and I'd take a long walk. And it was like day 10. Of this trip. And it occurred to me, it was like, as I was walking, I was thinking about these different scenes or whatever in my life. And the thought occurred to me, wow, when I look at myself through my eyes, I like myself.
Yeah.
And I took another step and I said, that's it. Never again am I going to put my power in someone else's hands. Yes. And I'm very happily married. We've been together for like ever now.
Yeah.
But to give away our power that way, to say, you decide if I'm worthy. No, yes. I'll decide if I'm worthy.
Absolutely. And that's something that, I'm a full believer that people can grow together. They always mm-hmm. say, men especially always feel like when they get into a relationship, the woman is trying to change them. And my thing is, I've never tried to change a man. It doesn't work. There's no reason to try and change your partner because they're not going to be who you want them to be. However, I fully believe that you can grow together. And that's mm-hmm. something that I love seeing people say, mm-hmm. I love who I am. I'm going to be who I am, but I love that you make me want to be a better person. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the difference between my ex made me feel like I wasn't good enough and he needed me to be a better person in whatever way he wanted me to be that version of mm-hmm. Who he thought I should be, but it wasn't growth. It really felt like I was being stifled. And I think that's the biggest difference, is being told that you are too much and that you need to stifle, or you need to not share your opinion. And then even beyond that, if I was better at anything than he was, that just wasn't allowed. To the point where we went to like a fun little painting class one time, and at the end of the night, my painting, just based on feedback from people, might have looked a little bit better than his. And we never went painting together again because it was something that he was not the best at. And so he did not want to do it anymore. And little things like that, where, you don't foster somebody's growth. You don't, help them see the best parts of them. And when those good parts do come out, you try to stifle them or kind of knock them down a peg or push them off that pedestal. That's when you really start to notice what love is not, and how you should be treated within a relationship and a partnership. Yeah,
I completely agree. And I think that one of the cruelest things we can say to another is, don't be you.
Oh, yeah.
We were born to be who we are. You know, and that doesn't mean we're not growing, because of course we're growing, but there's a huge difference. So now, shifting gears a little bit too. Mm-hmm. So then you went backpacking, which was awesome. And you were in Egypt, right? When you discovered the fragrance. Do I have that right? So tell us a little bit about that, because this is awesome.
Yeah. So I knew one of the places that I wanted to go was Egypt while I was traveling. I had a few places in mind, Australia, Egypt, Paris, France, that, you know, were just kind of dream places that I wanted to make sure I visited. So Egypt, I knew it was a destination, but I really only knew, you know, about Cairo. I didn't know a lot. I didn't do a lot of research. Like I said, ahead of time, I really wanted to go with the flow everywhere that I went. So when I got there, I had a lot of people ask me if I was doing a cruise down the Nile River. And I was like, sure. No, I hadn't thought of it. But if that's what I'm supposed to do, then yes, you know, then yes, I'm going to do it. And so I quickly booked, you know, a cruise. When I say down the Nile River, that means you're actually traveling north, because it travels backwards. That's one of those rivers that goes the opposite direction. So I always say, you know, I was traveling down the Nile, but that meant that I had to fly down into the port city, and we traveled north along the river. And I had guides at each of our stops that help you, you know, get to the temples or to like the Valley of the Tombs or the Valley of the Kings, where all the tombs are. And phenomenal guides over there. You know, they really take pride in their history and their culture. And they go to school just to study Egyptology, which is really cool, because you can learn so much from them, just letting them talk to you while you're traveling. So my fantastic guide one day asked if I wanted to stop on the way back towards the port at a perfumery. And at first I was kind of like, if you think we should, whatever, you know. And he said, well, you know, the Egyptians basically invented like fragrance and perfume from essential oils and everything. So my thought, of course, was cool. Yeah. Like if that's, you know, let's go learn more about it. And I got there and they started bringing out things that we are very familiar with. So eucalyptus, vanilla, lavender, sandalwood, these beautiful scents that we have at home. And they're lovely. But I remember saying to him, you know, I can get all of these at home. I'm traveling to experience new things. What have you got for me that I can only get in Egypt, or I can only get in this area, or is your personal favorite? And they brought out a couple things. And one of them was papyrus oil. And I say this all the time, because I talk to people about it all the time, of course, now. But when I say I fell in love with a scent, it is amazing to me the impact that fragrance can have on somebody. I had never experienced it like that before, but I smelled this for the first time and just my gut said, this, like, you have to have this. And I bought, I think, 3 or 4 bottles of it, like big bottles of it. And I shipped it back to myself in the US. I was still traveling. I only had that backpack. I couldn't possibly carry around jugs of oil with me. So I said, you know what, I'm just going to ship it back to myself. And so I did. And then I went along on my travels. But when I got back to the States a couple of months later and started wearing that papyrus oil everywhere, the compliments that I got on it and the comments about it, and people were having the same reaction that I had had. And I started giving it away just a little bit as a gift here and there, you know, and when I realized, okay, I'm starting to get low on it, I better be careful. I went online to buy more and saw that it basically was not readily available as pure papyrus oil in the US. And that was heartbreaking to me, because I was like, wait a second, this is something that's been used for thousands of years. It's very well known in that region of the world. Why aren't we taking advantage of this? It's too beautiful for people not to experience. I took me about a year, I would say, to get in touch with that little perfumery again and start to set up the processes to, you know, be able to purchase more of the oil and get it shipped to me and get it imported, and began selling just this oil. I mean, just in little bottles that I bought off Amazon, and, you know, just however I could in the beginning, because people liked it. They wanted more of it. My friends and family and everybody wanted it. So it started as just a tiny little, you know, hobby of selling this oil, because I was so passionate about it and I felt like people should experience it. And 3 years into the company, and I own a fragrance company, which is crazy to say, but it's lovely to think that it came from, you know, travels that I took to to heal and to rediscover myself, and that I've come this far because of that trip.
And now it makes me really curious what papyrus oil smells like, because it's like, I don't know.
I know. And that's the thing. Anytime I do in-person events or markets or anything, I always have a little sign that says, have you ever smelled papyrus oil? And people walk up to me and look at me and they're like, what is that? Like, what do you even mean? And I'm like, for real, the stuff that Egyptians used for paper and to make boats. And, you know, I mean, they made everything out of papyrus. But who knew that it smelled so beautiful?
Now, what is the difference between a cologne, a perfume that you might buy in the store that can be like kind of clinging and essential oils and that type of stuff?
That's an awesome question. And honestly, probably one of the biggest reasons people come to my website to learn stuff like this, because I love, you know, this is where my public health and health education background come in, is that I love educating people and teaching people kind of the differences between some of these things. So what we think of as traditional perfumes and colognes have a lot of additives to them, mostly alcohols. And so that is what makes them sprayable. So they have a small percentage, very small percentage of fragrance oil, often a synthetic fragrance oil, which isn't necessarily a bad thing. Synthetic doesn't mean dangerous by any means. However, the difference between those synthetic fragrance oils with alcohol added means that it's just not going to last on the skin for as long. So that alcohol is made or is put in there to help make it dissipate, to help make it sprayable. Whereas a solid oil, you know, a pure oil means that it's going to last a lot longer on your skin. It's a whole lot more concentrated. So a little bit goes a long way. It's all natural. And all natural doesn't always mean safe. I always tell people, you know, rub a little poison ivy on your skin and you'll know right away that natural does not mean safe. So I don't, you know, necessarily say our stuff is always going to be safer than somebody else's, but it typically means less headaches, less reactions, less allergies, you know, less skin allergies and reactions. And so that's just something that, you know, a lot of people like myself, I was never able to enjoy fragrances when I was younger because of my headaches and migraines. And this is something that I'm sitting in my office right now, surrounded by, you know, these fragrance oils, and I can actually be in a room full of them because, you know, they just don't do the same thing that fragrances with all these alcohols and these other additives can do to your body.
Yeah. My mom used to have trouble with it too. And so I guess it's very common. Mm-hmm. I actually had a couple dermatologists say, I don't know why we were talking about it, but that when you spray it, you know, a lot of women spray perfumes on their neck and chest, and it's very drying and it can cause wrinkling there.
Very. Yes. Yes. Very drying. Your décolletage, that area, your neck and everything, that is very, very thin skin. And the moment you put anything with alcohols, it dries it out. And so that's why a lot of people can't wear traditional perfumes and colognes too, because of their skin. And because of that, we even went one step further and created a jewelry line that has porous stones on it. So you can actually wear our fragrance oils on the jewelry, so you don't have to wear it directly on your skin. So it's just another way to be able to enjoy fragrance and wear fragrances if your skin is, you know, what is causing the issue and the reaction.
That's really cool. I love that. Now, the name of your company, Anikit.
Yep.
What does that mean?
So coming up with a name for my company, I really wanted to make sure that I gave, you know, that I acknowledged and gave credit back to the Egyptians and where this product came from. So because papyrus grows very bountifully down the Nile River, I decided to name my company after the Egyptians' goddess of the Nile River. So Anikit is the goddess of the Nile River, where papyrus grows and where, you know, we get our papyrus oil from.
Love that. I also just love that this whole business came about because you know, traveled through adversity and you were open to new possibilities as they might unfold. Because I think a lot of times when we go through adversity, it's so easy for us, and this is not a judgment because I know I've done it myself, it's easy to try to hang on to what we had, even if it wasn't, you know, even if it wasn't right for us, versus just saying, hey, there's something new waiting for me and it's time to reach out to that. So I love that. So hopefully if someone's listening to this and they're like, ooh, I want to know what this smells like. I want to know more about this. Where can they find out more?
Yeah. So our website online is anikitluxury.com. And Anuket is spelled A-N-U-K-E-T. I know that's a new word, a new term for most people. And then social media, we're at Anuket Luxury on all the social medias. You can find us everywhere that way too. But we do sell a sample pack on our website. And I like to mention that because it means that you can try. We have 6 different fragrances now. So you can try, you know, a little bit of each of them and find what's right for you if you're scared to just dive right into like one with like the papyrus.
Yeah, that's cool. So what are the 6 that you have in the sample pack?
Yeah, so papyrus is still our number one seller and our signature scent because we are still one of the only sources of it in the US. We also have blue lotus, which is a traditional Egyptian scent as well. Very clean scent. If you remember back in the day, cool water. The fragrance that, you know, smells like fresh linen, very, very clean. Saqqara is a floral, technically. However, many, many men love it, fall for it. It's kind of a masculine floral, if there ever was such a thing. All of my fragrances I consider unisex, but this is just one that the guys just tend to absolutely love. Mimosa is another one. It's a little bit softer floral. And then we have 2 traditional Egyptian scents, the Egyptian rose. So anybody who likes a rose oil, that's a great way to experience it. And then Egyptian musk, because musk is one of those classic Egyptian scents that I get asked for all the time.
Love that. So, and I'll put those in the show notes, you know, the link and everything so people can find it. And I guess final question I'd have would be, if you were looking back at yourself as you were in that relationship before, or if someone is sitting in those shoes now where they're like, ooh, this maybe isn't quite right, what advice would you want to give to them or that you wish you would have had back then?
I always struggle a little bit to answer this question because I don't think I would have taken much advice from anybody at the time.
Yeah.
I think that's one of the hardest parts is that you can't tell somebody to leave a relationship before they're ready. However, you can be a support system for them. I was very, very lucky that I had a best friend that the moment I said, we're breaking up, I've got to get out of this house. She said, come stay with me now, you know? And I think that's the biggest thing is because I felt alone otherwise, because I had been gaslighted to believe that everybody was against me, I didn't know if I'd have any support or have anywhere to turn once I got out of the relationship. So I think that just looking, if you're in the relationship, looking for those support systems, finding people who, you know, show that glimmer of, I don't want to say that you should leave your relationship, but if you do, I'm here for you. Or if you're on the outside and you're looking at, you know, a friend who's going through something like this, continuously telling them that they just need to leave, you know, that's not helpful because they can't do it until they're ready. But letting them know that you will be there when they're ready, that means a lot. It means a lot to somebody who's scared to go.
Great advice. And you're totally right. They have to be ready, but be there when they are. So Ashley, thank you so much for joining me today. I love this. And thanks for sharing your story. And I just really appreciate it.
Thank you so much. I really enjoyed being here.
I hope that you enjoyed hearing Ashley's story. The thing that stood out to me the most is this. Above all, we have to trust ourselves. We have tremendous innate wisdom, and we have to have the courage to listen to it. We know when something isn't quite right, and we know when things are right. We need to trust ourselves. That's when the adventure begins. That's when life is exciting and rewarding, and I believe it's when life has a sense of ease to it. Now, I didn't say easy. We might still be working hard, but we aren't struggling with it. There is a tremendous distinction between working hard and struggling. We cannot thrive when we are struggling. My hope is that by sharing these stories, you gain new insights and inspiration, because my goal with this podcast is to help more people thrive no matter what.